Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Sarah Dolan. Dr. Dolan is Associate Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience at Baylor. She's a leading national researcher with a focus on scholarship that gives back. Last winter, she was named by the American Psychological Association as one of 30 citizen psychologists across the country, an honor given to leaders who serve in their communities and contribute to improving people's lives. Dolan came to Baylor in 2007 and has led a variety of meaningful research projects and initiatives. After the West Fertilizer Plant explosion in 2013, she worked with Baylor colleagues to form a volunteer crisis intervention team. There, she worked alongside many first responders who dubbed her role as Rescuing the Rescuers. She also works with the Waco VA Center for Excellence and Texas Psychological Association's Disaster Response Network and helped form the Psychological Intervention Team within the McLennan County Reserve Corps. Dr. Sarah Dolan, our guest today, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just dive right in. You know, as a psychologist, you're in the business of helping people. You know, that by its very nature, that's what you do. But what is it about the avenue that you've chosen? As we described some of the things that you've done, that's in part enabled by that avenue as being a research-based psychologist with an eye on taking that research in the community. What is it about that path that you've chosen that most speaks to or motivates you?
Well, I think we're all citizens of whatever town, society that we live in, and each of us has a unique set of skills that contributes to that society. And my set of skills just happens to be psychology and research. So I think it's important to give back as a citizen to keep society going. And one of the great things about Baylor, and in fact, one of the reasons I came to Baylor, is because here there's a rewards placed on what was called informed engagement back in 2012, Vision 2012, mm-hmm. Pro Futurus, so on and so forth, that really placed value on people taking their expertise into the community that they work with. And I just loved that about Baylor, so I've been able to take advantage of that.
So as a teacher and researcher, what are your main areas of expertise and focus?
Sure. Well, my training is in substance use disorders and addiction and neuropsychology, which is the study of brain-behavior relationships. And I came to Baylor to study those things. And once I got to Central Texas, I learned there are a lot of veterans here. And veterans have been sort of an understudied population at that point when I came in 2007. And the Waco VA was starting the Center for Excellence in Research on Returning War Veterans. And I had a connection with the person who was the director at that time. And we started collaborating. And I got much more interested in trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and neuropsychological factors in post-traumatic stress disorder, and kind of away I went with the mm-hmm. trauma research.
You know, trauma is a term that certainly everyone knows, but how, in your role, how is that defined? What is trauma, and how do you approach it through your research?
I'm so glad you asked mm-hmm. that question because I think it's misunderstood. So mm-hmm. there are multiple definitions of trauma. There's the kind of lay definition. We might call that trauma with a lowercase t. And that's sort of an extreme emotional reaction to an event. Trauma with a capital T, or the diagnosis, the post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis, the trauma is an event that's life-threatening and comes with a variety of psychological symptoms, including trying to avoid thinking about it, being restless or on edge when you think about it, thinking a little bit differently about the world that you're in because of this trauma. And if those symptoms last for more than 30 days after one of these potentially life-threatening events, that then becomes called post-traumatic stress disorder. But we all experience trauma with a lowercase t sort of in our lives. And it's impactful, but it's not at that diagnostic level.
Mm-hmm. We want to learn more about how you approach that and how you help people do that. And we've got some great examples through your work. We mentioned West and your work with veterans. But let's start something with something a little more recent first that you've been doing. And that is your work on a grant, a $3 million grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, working to help people who help children. Can you give us an overview of that?
Sure. That's a project that is a multi-collaboration kind of project with different universities. And what we're doing primarily is training mental health clinicians to learn how to administer and utilize in their practice evidence-based assessment tools for trauma in children. So kind of the standard of practice for most mental health practitioners is you interview someone who's been through a traumatic episode and try to make sure that you're picking up all the different symptoms that they have and make sure that you have a good conceptualization of what their diagnoses may be. But we know that when you're doing that sort of informal interview, you may miss things. That's just kind of how our brain works, is we might miss an important symptom because we're honing in on something else that seems more important. If you're using evidence-based tools, those are going to survey all the possible symptoms and give you a better chance at accurately diagnosing what's going on with a kiddo and then prescribing the correct treatment for that kiddo.
So the way they experience trauma, is it, I don't want to say one size fits all because that sounds too broad, but is it a little bit of trying to dive in past some of the standard, just some of those standard questions?
Exactly. So we know that different kinds of trauma can result in different kinds of symptoms for different people. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're assessing not just symptoms of trauma / anxiety, but also depression and suicidality and some behavior disorders that may occur in these kiddos.
Mm-hmm. So you create these assessments, and what then is you kind of create these EBAs, if you will, the evidence-based assessments. What happens once you have those in place?
So the assessments that we're using have been developed by other expert researchers, and we do a didactic training for these mental health professionals that's about 9 hours of training in how to use these. Then we ask them to use them with 3 kids in their clinical practice, and they get consultation from expert trainers, and that consultation really teaches them how to use the assessments with their particular kids in those clinical presentations. And once we've got those clinicians trained up, we're hoping that they then use those assessments in their practice so that they can effectively target the symptoms and use the correct treatment.
Your work on this, it's going to impact children, certainly, but it's also helping fellow practitioners in the field. So what does it mean to you that this research can provide professional enhancement that, you know, feels like it can impact even more people than just that one-on-one focus?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why a lot of us do research in general, is because we can have a broader impact on society. It's very rewarding to be a psychologist and work one-on-one with somebody, but you're only able to impact that person and maybe their family and friends sort of indirectly. But if you do research, publish that research, get the results of that research out into public life, you're impacting many, many more people, sort of getting a bigger bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm. This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. Sarah Dolan, Associate Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience here at Baylor. And let's talk about the work you did in West, going back to 2013. I think everyone remembers the fertilizer plant explosion. So many people lost their lives, a number of them first responders, and certainly everyone in the town of West was impacted by it. Shortly after that, you partnered with Dr. James Eller, who we've had on the program before, from the school, Diana Garland School of Social Work here at Baylor, formed a crisis intervention team. Could you take us back to those days a little bit and how that came together?
Sure. I was fortunate enough to meet Dr. Eller pretty early on in my tenure at Baylor, and he had already been starting to develop something like this. He had partnered with the Department of Public Health, or Public Health District, here in the county, and I had some experience with trauma really from 9/11 and working with, attempting to work with first responders in the 9/11 episode. So he and I met, and we were kind of able to blossom this idea that he had when the West Fertilizer Plant explosion happened. So we were called on by the emergency response team in West to come and provide services really for whoever needed them. So we were able to provide this kind of crisis intervention service for citizens of West. We were able to provide it for first responders. And we were able to then set up sort of a longer term counseling program for folks in West. So we did sort of an acute response, and then we were able to partner with some people to provide a longer term response for people.
Mm-hmm. What's unique about working with first responders in a time like that? What are some of those common threads you find?
Yeah, there are you know, they're a unique population in some ways, and in some ways they're like anybody else who would experience a trauma. The uniqueness is that these are folks who are trained to face trauma every day. And I think what comes with that is a thought or a belief that they need to be immune to the emotional effects of a trauma. And if they are experiencing some of these emotional effects, there's a stigma against seeking help. Sometimes that stigma comes from, you know, just their interaction with other people and, you know, that kind of mentality of being tough. But sometimes the stigma comes from a belief that if they are experiencing psychological problems, that could put their job in jeopardy. So, for instance, a firefighter who says that they're having substance abuse problems may have a fear that they would no longer have a job as a firefighter if they're seeking mental health services. So first responders as a group and soldiers also tend to keep some of these problems buried a little bit more. So it takes sort of some extra skill and empathy and warmth to help them discuss those kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. First responders are also a unique population in that, you know, they're in the trenches with each other every day, and they have a culture and a language, and it's hard for people who are not first responders to communicate with people who are first responders about emotional stuff, because those of us who aren't in the trenches with them every day. So again, it takes some sort of cultural sensitivity to work with these folks.
What does it mean to you to be able to, whether it's through these evidence-based assessments or other work you've done, to be able to kind of get in there with the people who really are serving these kinds of roles?
I think it's about giving back to people. So, you know, certainly first responders are people who are putting their lives on the line for us on a daily basis. That's not a profession that I would choose or that I would even be able to do. But those people perform a service for the rest of us. And I'd like to sort of give back to those folks. And dealing with trauma specifically for me is about helping people see that they're resilient. I think a lot of people go through a traumatic event, especially one of these life-threatening events, combat, for instance, or the West Fertilizer plant explosion or car accidents or those kinds of things. And they may feel that their life is forever altered by having that experience. But in fact, we know the rule is that people are resilient. Very few people develop post-traumatic stress disorder after one of those events. And if they do develop post-traumatic stress disorder, we've got treatments that are effective. And I want to be able to deliver those treatments so that these folks can live the happy, healthy lives that they deserve to live.
We are visiting with Sarah Dolan, talking about her work after the West Fertilizer plant explosion in 2013 here on the program right now. And you, in the days after that, you know, West is a, I mean, I think everyone knows West, right? Certainly generations have stopped there for kolaches and, you know, Great Czech Heritage. It's just that embodiment of this close-knit, smaller Texas town. What was what was the impact on the broader community in the days after that? Because it literally touched everybody.
It did, absolutely. You know, a lot of people had their homes destroyed. A good number of people in the town were related to some of the first responders who perished in that event. And, you know, even if they didn't have a house destroyed or weren't connected to one of the first responders who passed away, there were media people flooding their town. There were FEMA folks flooding their town. There were ATF folks. All sorts of different agencies and people sort of descended on the town and really kind of made it pretty emotionally difficult, regardless of what connection to the event there actually was. The one thing that I think one of the things that was really helpful about having such a close-knit town is they helped each other recover. This was a town, in my experience, that had some real challenges in having outsiders come in and be helpful. And they were really, they valued each other and their own strength as a community to recover from this event. And I think they did it really beautifully. They really came together and did all sorts of things to recover that the experts wouldn't have thought of. Mm-hmm.
What's an example of that, if you can paint that picture?
Sure. They did some memorial things that were kind of outside of what the experts, quote unquote, had recommended or sort of brought to them. They rebuilt very quickly. The school that was destroyed, they rebuilt that very, very quickly. There were some parks, some playgrounds that they rebuilt very quickly. And they did some anniversary events that were really meaningful and that really could have only been done by the folks that lived there.
Mm-hmm. It kind of paints a little bit of a picture of resilience, which is what you've talked about in your research. Certainly resilience is something you try to help people build, but what did you learn about resilience through that process of working with the people of West?
People are, by their nature, resilient. We all experience, like I said earlier, traumatic events. And many of us who experience traumatic events have some emotional reaction afterwards, but again, it doesn't develop into that clinically diagnostic level of PTSD. We are able to call on our internal strength and our coping resources and family and friends to really prop us back up. And the folks in West were an excellent example of that resilience. There were some rumors going around and some folks were coming into the town and telling the citizens of West, you all have post-traumatic stress disorder, you all have traumatic brain injuries. And one of the roles that Dr. Eller and I played was to really help them understand that that's not the norm for them. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're having these symptoms, sure, you should have those checked out and see a physician, see a mental health provider. But really, after a couple weeks, you shouldn't be having these symptoms because you're strong and human nature is vibrant and resilient.
Visiting with Dr. Sarah Dolan, and from your work there, I know came research and some other programs. Could you tell us what those looked like?
Yeah, Dr. Eller and I were able to publish a paper about how to work with towns that are in this kind of recovery process and how the mental health recovery of a town parallels the emergency response recovery. So we were able to sort of talk about how we worked hand in hand with the emergency responders and the emergency management structure.
And we mentioned at the top of the show, you work with the McLennan County Reserve Corps psychological intervention team that continues to train people. And another example of that kind of community partnership aspect of the work you do. What is that team, and who all do you work with to help them prepare in the event that there would be an emergency of some sort?
Sure. These are the folks that run the emergency responses whenever something happens in town. So the emergency management coordinator and that person's staff. The person that we work the most closely with is Stephanie Alvey in the public health district. And she's sort of the shepherd, if you will, of our medical reserve corps. She is a person who helps us coordinate our annual training. So Dr. Eller and I run a class every January for Baylor students, faculty, community members, really whoever wants to come and be trained in psychological first aid. And Stephanie and her team come in and help us run a mock exercise, if you will. So we teach everybody the skills, and then we do an exercise, a role play of a disaster. And throughout the year, the public health district, with Dr. Eller and I, offer monthly trainings in all sorts of things related to community crises and disaster management and all that kind of stuff.
Visiting with Dr. Sarah Dolan here on Baylor Connections, and those are just some of the examples of why. Late last year, you were awarded the Citizen Psychologist designation by the American Psychological Association. What did that mean to you to receive that? Again, one of just 30 people in the nation who were given that honor.
Well, let me tell you, the other people who got that honor do some amazing things in their community. But for me, it was a real honor to be recognized for the volunteer work that Dr. Eller and I have been doing in the community. And it's sort of a symbol of the best of what you can do as a professor at Baylor.
Well, and part of that, you've talked about taking that research aspect to help other people. And as we head into the final couple minutes of the program, I want to ask you, I know research such a big part of what you do. As Baylor moves more towards that research focus and investment through Illuminate and the R1 Tier 1 aspirations, what are you most excited about as you see as Baylor moves in that direction?
I think we've got a unique opportunity to do some really meaningful research as Baylor that other universities don't have. I'm hopeful that the best outcome of this will not just be increased research expenditures and grant funding coming into the university, but the smart, ambitious, energetic researchers at Baylor being able to impact the world in a larger way.
Well, we look forward to that and seeing more of what you and you have some great colleagues in psychology and neuroscience who are doing very meaningful work along those lines. And we'll look forward to seeing more of that as we move forward. Well, Sarah Dolan, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you joining us on the program, you and some of your other guests this month. We've kind of put you all through the ringer in photographs and stories and this, and we appreciate your time very much.
Thanks a lot, Derek.
Dr. Sarah Dolan, citizen psychologist, associate professor of psychology and neuroscience at Baylor, our guest today here on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other Baylor Connections programs online at baylor.edu/connections. Thanks for joining us here on Baylor Connections.